So our next speaker is Ense Obot Witherspoon, who serves as the Executive Director for the Children's Environmental Health Network, where her responsibilities include organizing, leading, and managing policy, education, training, and science-related programs. She's also a member of the Institute of Medicine's Environmental Health Sciences Roundtable, co-chair of the Leadership Council for the National Conversation on Public Health and Chemical Exposures. Ms. Witherspoon is Strategy Advisor for California Breast Cancer Prevention Initiatives Project, a board member for the Pesticide Action Network of North America, and serves on the Maryland Children's Environmental Health Advisory Board, or Advisory Council, excuse me. Ms. Witherspoon has a variety of publications and the distinct honor of being the recent recipient of the William R. Riley Award in Environmental Leadership from the Center for Environmental Policy at American University. So thank you so much for talking with us about some emerging initiatives and best practices related to environmental exposures and early care and planning environments.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. If anyone wants to stand up for a second, I do not mind if you do that. I know it's been a very long day. This is an exhausting marathon of a conference. This is, I don't know, my 14th, 15th year, and it doesn't matter. I'm always still exhausted, so I thank you for hanging in there. Thank you to my colleagues. These have been really great presentations. I have nothing to disclose as far as relationships. Those of you who do not know us, the Children's Environmental Health Network is a national nonprofit. We've been around almost 25 years, actually, working in the same genre of work and with the same mission, which is to make sure that all children, regardless of their race, their social economic status, where they live geographically, and any other factors, get in the way of them having a nurtured and supportive and safe and healthy environment and set of environments to play and interact with and learn and grow in. In order to achieve that mission, we have these same goals, which are promote the peer-reviewed science in the field. We wouldn't be anywhere without the peer-reviewed science. We then take that science and help to translate it along with various colleagues all over to make sure that all of us can be using it in education and practice and eventually, of course, promoting child protective policies. That's the hardest step, but it's, of course, quite meaningful as well. Hopefully, one day soon, we won't have to work so hard in incorporating or trying to draw attention to environmental health hazards in, for example, state child care licensing. It's a process. It takes a while, but that would be a huge win for all of us if some of these factors, pesticides, lead exposures, and some other known exposures to children with a great amount of peer-reviewed science behind them were already incorporated into child care standards, some of the work that we are doing that I'll get to. My objectives today are to describe some of the different environments briefly because I think they've been explored enough, and again, why children are vulnerable, why we're looking at these spaces, explain how the environmental exposures influence pediatric epidemics that we're running into and constantly challenged by, and so, more importantly, to provide also some examples of pilot programs and some great best practices that I think are promoting some great child care environments. So 60% of our children in the U.S. Are in some form of child care, and this is pretty much data from licensed child care. It's not really getting into the grandmother down the street or the grandfather or the aunt that's being kind enough to take in some of her neighbors and or family at low or no cost. And there are some reasons as to why some of those facilities aren't more formal and paying dues to become a licensed facility, and that is even another set of risks that we're very aware of. But this data just shows us that in this country, up to 40 hours a week, if not more, especially in some place like D.C. where they have three shifts. So there are some child care centers that are open 24 hours a day to accommodate the military shifts and whatnot. They might not have the same employees, hopefully working 24 hours, but they are open. So these facilities, these environments are extremely important when we talk about the cognitive learning age range of children. 6 weeks of age all the way up to usually 5 years. Sometimes some of them have kindergarten 6 years of age. It's a huge window of opportunity for positive reinforcement and growth, as well as, unfortunately, some negative factors to human development and growth. So many environmental health issues, there are hardly any environmental health issues that are addressed in a formative, substantial, standardized way. There are some states that are totally making some headway, many that we've been working with and others that many colleagues have been working with, but when you look across the board, there is no, again, standard setting in childcare as it pertains to environmental health exposures. There is no form of standardized education and training. Hence why we created a program that I'll get into. So when you talk about all these opportunities, professional development, all childcare providers have to go through their own licensing. The licensing minimum amount required changes per state, but everyone that works in the childcare facility has to have that licensing. They have to go to education. It's a perfect opportunity to work into the wide range of issues that they are expected to be well-versed on, what I call Children's Environmental Health 101. The accreditation process is an opportunity. Of course, again, the licensing. You have state licensing officials going into childcare facilities that are licensed, sometimes on a pop-up basis, and then at other times on an arranged basis, to look for specific markers to make sure that they are fulfilling their needs to be an open childcare facility and being a health and safe place for children to go to. And if they are in any violation, there's the threat of potentially putting them on probation and or closing their doors until they meet those minimum requirements. There's not much pertaining to environmental exposures in that licensing paradigm, which is a huge concern. There are quality rating systems that are also an opportunity. Head Start requirements are yet an opportunity, especially if it starts from the Head Start program and the early Head Start program, all of those grantees would have to abide by whatever those standards set may be. But there is some exciting progress happening, but I just want to offer that there are still a range of opportunities out there for us to continue to incorporate a lot of this very important science and work in. What we do know is that there's limited information about child care on specific exposure, so that's part of the challenge. But the peer review literature is growing, slowly, but it's growing. So it does make it difficult at times for most of us out here in the advocacy side of things and training side to make those links, those unequivocal links between environment and health outcomes, specifically due to exposure during the 8, 9, 10, 12-hour time in a child care facility. So there are a bunch of some peer-reviewed science that's coming out. This is one from 2001 where they looked at the levels of persistent organic pollutants in several child care facilities. It was a small study, you know, so they acknowledged that was one limitation as far as the numbers of centers involved, but they found that the highest exposures that they were indicating were around phthalates and phenol, so similar to what Derek's been sharing with us, but we are now seeing this in the early learning environments. And primarily those exposures were due to their dietary intake, which is quite interesting. And also they found indoor air levels of all the compounds in the centers were higher than those in the outdoor. Now we do know that, again, a lot of our science needs to be very clear that indoor air, you know, is much different than outdoor air, and we can't assume that they're the same in it. And because, unfortunately, so much of us, including our children, spend so much time indoors, I would offer that the indoor environment is a very, very critical piece moving forward and looking at what they're being exposed to, especially in contained environments that at times, sometimes childcare facilities have windows, but they're glued shut or they're painted shut. So even if they wanted to open them, it's not really even an option. And depending on where they are, it doesn't mean necessarily that the air coming in would be all that much better at times. Here's another study that was done in 2013 where they found that 14% of the childcare facilities that they looked at had lead hazards over the allowable limits, if you will, set by the Centers for Disease Control. So that's an estimated almost 500,000 children that were represented in these centers that they looked at. 5% of them had allergen levels associated with asthma and allergic conditions, and 75% indicated that they apply some form of pesticide. I will tell you, in some of the work that I've done in the District of Columbia, in interviewing some of the directors, it's very interesting. I mean, they're very, nothing against them, but when you ask them if they're spraying pesticides in an otherwise very clean environment, they'll say yes, and you ask them why or what is the mixture, they have no idea. They think that that's the public health practice. Spraying the pesticide, not all the various behaviors that our first wonderful speaker talked about as far as not even making an environment conducive for, if you will, pests to want to explore and hang out. And some of the facilities did have unsafe levels of contaminants of other kinds. In 2004, this survey found that young children were likely to be exposed to these known hazards in their early childcare environment: pesticides, arsenic-treated lumber, lead, common asthma triggers, and that less than 3 received formal training in indoor air quality management, lead, and pesticides, which, again, is not at all surprising. Asa Bradman, who's also one of our science advisors to our work, worked in this pesticide management and pest management and pesticide use in California Child Care Centers study, and I believe they looked at about 40 in total, and they found that over 55%, again, used pesticides. And again, we're finding this more and more, again, that is deemed to be the best public health practice to deter any of these pests that we've talked about, which is unfortunate. So we've totally missed a public health messaging opportunity, and so far. 47% use methods that leave residues of pesticides within the childcare environment. And when asking about their use, 30%, again, believe that this was a safer practice than not, or safe practice. And 14% had thought it was a strategy for keeping their facility clean. Asa Bradman released another report in 2012, and hopefully a lot of you saw this. It got a lot of press. So we were very proud of this for him. But again, all the things that we know and would have expected to have seen, we're now seeing playing out in our child care facilities. Again, this was a smaller study, but again, in California, almost 90% of the centers that he studied had exceeded formaldehyde levels. 30% had exceeded other contaminants, 46% with PM10 concentrations exceeding the California, I think it's 8-hour occupancy standard that they have that would relate to child care facilities as an occupational space. Most facilities exceeded the Prop 65 safe harbor levels for carcinogens. Over 40 volatile organic compounds were found, and on and on. I don't want to add to the depression piece, but I mean, a lot of what a lot of us would have expected, we're now seeing it playing out. Yet another one in 2014, earlier March of 2014, found that there's no mandatory, again, re-emphasize that no mandatory federal licensing standards are in place, that requirements that address the potential for exposure and environmental contaminants are rare. So again, a lot of us that have been in this for a while have been promoting this, but it's exciting to see it now playing out in the peer-reviewed literature. And this was an article in Environmental Health Perspectives this last May, which talked about environmental health standards, again, lagging behind that of schools, K-12 schools, that we certainly have a fractured regulatory landscape at best. There's a challenge yet before us to educate our providers, our child care providers, on basic environmental health exposures and what they can do about those exposures, and that environmental health laws are certainly scarce at best. So getting into more of the positive side of this, what's going on, what are some ways that you all might want to get engaged, what are some model practices? Our organization has been working with the University of Maryland, so we are trying to do our part in snippets of ways and pilots to go in and work with air sampling to really, again, assist with what is really going on in some of our child care facilities. So we did a pilot of, it was about 14 licensed child care facilities in D.C. as we're trying to get a bigger R01 research grant with NIH. So University of Maryland went and set up these air monitors. So we had to get a lot of permissions, as you can imagine. These were big kind of atrocities, you know, things set up in the corner. And some parents were very, you know, had a lot of good questions and everything. But once we got into those 14, we went in, set it up during the beginning of the day, and then they came back before the end of the day. And while we're still reviewing those initial preliminary reports, we are finding that certainly there were elevated levels of volatile organic compounds, including benzene and toluene. It was interesting. One of them actually was close to the Ronald Reagan building in D.C., and come to find out it was just above a dry cleaner. So the toluene, because they couldn't figure out what was the source of the high levels of toluene in some of them. And some of them thought that that wasn't even a functioning dry cleaner, and it actually had closed, but it had still had the levels that were being admitted just above into the child care facility. Let's not get into ones that are close to parking garages or other forms of course, regular traffic that the air ducts are just sucking in. In Pennsylvania, we're very proud of a lot of our initiatives, but in Pennsylvania in particular, we've been working with their Healthy and Green Initiative. So this is a voluntary quality improvement program working very seriously to promote professional development and incorporate environmental health training into that child care professional development. And they recognize eco-healthy steps that centers are taking. They've actually incorporated our eco-healthy child care program curriculum into their state training for child care professionals, and I'll talk about that program in a little bit. They've also worked in a little mini-grant program thanks to the Heinz Foundation, so that's been a great way to connect the dots. We could go in, we can bring all the science we want, we can encourage facilities to test, but what about when they find, for example, that they have high levels of radon and they can't afford a $1,500 to $3,000 renovation in the basement level to create the ventilation needed to reduce that radon exposure? That's where we have had a lot of frustrations, because some states have programs and there are some academic partnerships, but again, we have nothing nationally to support some of these providers who, some of them are just getting by. Some of them have left very well-paying jobs because they wanted to get into childcare, and this is where they feel their heart is. But it's not like they're making huge money in many cases. I'm talking about the home childcare facilities or the smaller ones. Some of the bigger ones do pretty well. In Indiana, there's a five-star recognition program, and they actually were one of the first out there that had kind of a checklist that they were working on in their state, and they were gracious enough to work with us when we started with our program, and then we expanded from there. It's a voluntary program. All of these programs are voluntary because, like I said, there's no mandate just yet to incorporate environmental health. And if a center goes through specific steps, they can be eligible either for a 3, 4, or 5-star designation. And again, that's something that is appreciated by the families that are looking for entrusted childcare among a range of criteria that they're looking for. And it's actually run by their environmental health department, not any form of childcare agency, which is also interesting. The Environmental Law Institute, we're working with them on a healthy childcare policy project. So in a 2-year period, we are planning to come up with a policy handbook. So the point here is to look at, we're exploring and looking through all the states in the country and looking at who has any form of environmental policy on the books. Not specific to childcare, of course, that's rare, and not even specific to schools, but who just has any form of environmental health policy. Then we can build from there, especially in those states. It would offer up and prioritize for us where we can create some model programs and encourage that those environmental health policies are then translated into early learning environments. I would throw in K-12 school environments too, but you know, our point is to come up with this policy handbook to be a tool that we can work with at the state level, our various partners, to help move on some protective policies that include environmental exposures when it comes to early learning environments. The Public Health Law Center is a web resource on state regulations that talks about healthy eating, physical activity, and tobacco control, and certainly begin to make the ties to environmental exposures, so you should know about them. Caring for Our Children, third edition, as we heard, it is considered the Bible of best practices. Again, it is focused, it is primarily a resource for home-based childcare, but certainly is applicable to any form of childcare. But that is the angle that they come from. I can be the first to tell you that they've taken a very serious approach to the science and translating the science and having a growing portion of this resource being focused on environmental health. I've been a part of the writing. A lot of our team and our staff has been a part of the editing and the writing. It's a very serious effort that definitely is a wonderful resource for all of us to be utilizing. And my hope and expectation is that sooner than later, all the great work that's gone into it will help in the standard setting and policy making practices at the state level, maybe even the federal level. The National Association for Regulatory Administration, otherwise known as NARA, is the Professional Association of Licensing Staff, so they're also a key partner. This year we've worked with them to incorporate children's environmental health topics into their strategic plan, which is huge. And actually we're also working with them to create a specific children's environmental health track into their future annual meeting. So that would be a regular track, just like here at APHA, we have an environmental health track of program and public health nursing. There will be now an environmental health track moving forward at their big meeting, which is another huge accomplishment. Health in All Policies, we have a Centers for Disease Control Cooperative Agreement where, again, we've been working to build some relationships and provide technical assistance to some of these agencies I've mentioned. Also, we've worked with the NRC, who we'll hear from in a few minutes, and again, working with the Caring for Our Children environmental health work, and also the AELL, which is the, let me get this right, Association for Early Learning Leaders. So there's been some really good work happening, and not just in the individual centers, but also in the various health professional associations, which have great influence in the childcare space, to bring them along. Our EcoHealthy Childcare Program, this is our website, offers free to low-cost solutions for childcare facilities. We provide resources, technical assistance, and training. There's no other program in the country doing this on a national scale, so we're very proud of that. We've been in this space for over 10 years now. We recognize providers through EcoHealthy endorsements, so there's a training side of the program and an endorsement side, and we help to market the centers. So again, we give them posters and decals. If they meet the minimum requirements to become an EcoHealthy childcare endorsed facility, this is a great talking and marketing piece for them with parents that are looking for this type of facility and safer, healthier practices. We have a 5-hour train the trainer. We used to train individual providers. Now we train the childcare educators within the state. Then they go and take our curriculum and train other healthcare professionals within their state. Just this year, our curriculum was adopted by the National Center for Healthy Housing, which is also another way to expand our reach. They're trained healthcare workers and trainers all over the country who now are using our curriculum as well as they're going into homes, which are also simultaneously being used as childcare. So materials are free on our web. We have fact sheets in 16 different topical areas. They're broken down into what is the issue, why is this an issue to children, what can I, as a provider, do about it? What are some low to no cost steps that I can do, and a variety of resources that folks can look into further to help support them. But we also provide technical assistance to the extent that we can. Facilities that are meeting our requirements, like I said, are endorsed for 2 years. After the 2-year endorsement is up, they then have to renew again. And parents that are searching for their facilities that are endorsed can go to our website and look at a U.S. map and say, okay, Bethesda, Maryland, I want to see which of my centers that I might be looking at are endorsed. So again, it's great marketing for them. It's science-based. We have a science committee and board that help to review all of our curriculum on a regular basis. We have our National Advisory Committee, which is the who's who in the child care arenas. All these acronyms are all big child care professional associations. I won't break them all down. And public health and real-time other advisors that are part of this 30-member team. We also have a science task force with people like Asa Bradman and other epidemiologists that provide us guidance. And we've gotten various awards that we're very proud of. NEHA just gave us the Innovation Award from the last year. We have some Child Care and School IPM Recognition Awards and an award from the U.S. EPA. These are just all the various entities that are a part of, again, the National Advisory Committee. We have the Train the Trainer, working with licensing staff and helping them be well educated on these issues. And also providing technical assistance to licensing. We're not waiting for each state to incorporate environmental health standards into their licensing. We're trying to train those staff members right now. And again, starting to get involved in the quality improvement programs across the country as yet another way to leverage and incorporate environmental health issues. And we want to thank all of these funders and contributors. They've been tremendous to the growth of this program, and we know we're still just scratching the surface. We're actually moving to build an online curriculum into this year, too, so we can get into many more facilities across the country. We also have this program into other parts of the other countries as well, which is pretty exciting. And here's all our various contacts. That's our main extension for the main program. Hester Paul's the director of our EcoHealthy Child Care Program. And then I'm down there, and we're all happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.